Welcome to another episode of Crossfire Faith and Gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Reverend David Petty, and our other co-host, Russ, is not able to be here today, but I've got our consistent and constant guest that is kind of, I guess, more of a host at this point than a guest, Brian. Welcome, Brian. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. So we've got an exciting show today. We're going to talk about a game that has kind of taken the internet by storm. I think both because it's popular and because it's got lots of bugs in it, which is more than just a pun. But we're going to talk about Helldivers 2, which lots of people are playing right now. Lots of people are talking about. It is February of 2024 when we're recording this. So who knows if this is going to keep being a popular game for months to come or something will overtake it in the future. But I think what I want to talk about today really is the question of how do we feel about Helldivers? Is it a great game? Is it a good game? Is it a game with good messages? It is a game with challenging messages, and maybe a little bit of all of the above. So, Brian, what do you think? And have you played it? Have you seen it? Tell me what your take on it is.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet, but I did watch your stream that you played with Russ recently. And I've also just been hearing a lot about it. So I think I have a pretty good, pretty good grasp on, the tone of the game. And it definitely has like kind of a sarcastic, Starship Troopers kind of a vibe where, it has a way of looking at things that's very sarcastic. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I think it's full of sarcasm. I mean, first from the get go. I mean, the instant the intro, you see this peaceful suburban town, and all of a sudden this family gets eaten by this bug, and the guy's like, "Oh no!" And then it jumps to the same guy, and he's like, "Don't let that be you. Become a Helldiver today." And it's a totally sarcastic and satirical. Comedic take, really. This is not a game that's meant to be taken as some sort of very intense, very serious. It's fun and it's funny, but it's got a lot of interesting tongue-in-cheek satirical angles, I think, on some stuff that's a little close to home in terms of the real world. So
yeah,
what's your take on that?
Yeah, the tongue is firmly in the cheek with this game. and, I think it's kind of interesting to think about games that are like this and the way that we interact with them and kind of how we take the messaging that they're giving, right? Whether we kind of take it seriously or whether we take it as I think the authors intended it to be, which is really as a joke, right? Like, oh, this is so over the top. Nobody would take this seriously. This is obviously satire. This is obviously very sarcastic. But I think there is a danger in presenting that and then some folks taking it at face value and being like, oh, yes. Yeah, I'm totally into this. So I think that maybe is the direction you're going. But yeah, I think there is some danger in falling into that trap.
Yeah. And I'm very hopeful. I think it's hard because we don't know how everybody's going to take it, right? There are some people who take things only extremely literally, some people who take nothing seriously. And I think my hope is that most people are seeing the comedy, they're seeing the satire, similar to Starship Troopers, which I actually never saw. I'll have to go back and watch that. But my understanding was that it was total comedy satire on kind of the space alien marine genre, if you will. And I think the game is in the same vein. I think the authors of the game intend it to be funny and over the top and for that to come through so obviously clearly. There's one line that sticks out where like you throw a grenade and your character says, how about a taste of liberty? And it's like tea, like the drink, right? So, but then the question is, you know, what is it that we're, if this is satire and if this is comedy, what is it that we're really poking fun at? And what are the places where that is really close to home as we live in a world that does have violence and imperialism and warfare and the dehumanization of our enemies, right? We're just fighting these bugs. So they don't have personalities. They don't have families. They don't, you know, we don't see them sitting down to dinner after a long day. Like they're just bugs. We can just blow them up. So what's your thoughts on how those are similar or perhaps maybe they're different than what we encounter in the real world?
Yeah. That is an interesting question. This game also reminds me of another game that has kind of a similar tone, and that's Broforce, if you've played that. And that's a very like kind of America-centric, you know, it's actually a 2D side-scrolling kind of action game, but it has a lot of the same tone and a lot of the layover. Over the top, we're gonna freedomize them kind of a thing, you know. And you know, again, very similar to Starship Troopers. In fact, going back to that, I remember when that movie came out, and I think I was in high school at the time, and I definitely knew some folks that kind of took that movie seriously, like, oh yeah, this is, yeah, gung-ho, you know. And kind of it was like they didn't get the joke, like it flew over their head, or maybe they just willfully ignored what was there. But yeah, I think with Helldivers, one of the aspects of it is the fact that the things you're fighting against are bugs or like robots. And I think that makes it even easier to kind of other those enemies, you know, to kind of separate them as like, oh, well, these are just, you know, they're just bugs or whatever. Who cares about bugs? Like, you know, they have no value or whatever. The kinds of things we do sometimes when we other, you know, people or animals or anything else, right? And so I think there it is easier with that game in terms of like, hey, our enemy is not even human. So, you know, it's okay to just do whatever. I think that's kind of an interesting aspect of this game. And again, I think it's an interesting aspect of our own interactions with the game and how we deal with it, because it is really great fun. This game is, I mean, Helldivers is super fun. The random stuff that happens, the interactions that you have with your fellow players that are on your team, you know, the hilarious team kills that can happen, all of that stuff, and just the over the top tone, it really is a lot of fun. But there is this kind of weird aspect to it that you know, I'm not always comfortable with unless I'm really making it clear that it's a joke.
Yeah, I want to see if I can pull in two clips from my recent stream to kind of highlight two specific things that you were talking about. For one, I think there's the just total over the top, you know, kind of over the top violence as satire. And so this clip, if I can get it loaded in here, there we go. Oh my.
Woo-hoo! That's what so, I'm talking about. Let's go.
For democracy. Charge! Delivered some extreme democracy. Forced freedom or willing freedom. It's willing freedom for us.
Hey, these bugs want to be American.
Right. So in that moment, right, there was a question of like, is this forced freedom or willing freedom? And especially the question of like, you know, we're delivering democracy, but we're delivering it by nuke. So maybe this is not necessarily the democracy that we had in mind. And yeah, so like how does that change our opinions on what we're delivering? But I want to share one other clip that I thought was a great example of the, you know, some of the potential upside you know, there's some camaraderie.
Oh, wait, I'm coming.
Go on, Dave.
Oh, give yeah, let's hug it out. Give
Hair chance.
Made it.
There
hair
we go. So in that clip, you know, Russ and I do an emote where we hug each other because we've just completed this difficult mission. Everybody's happy. And, you know, so I think it's interesting because there's this opportunity for camaraderie and shared experience. And then there's also this kind of, you know, delivering democracy by nuclear weapon. And I think it is a weird question that I want to figure out, like, how are people taking this? Do people get the satire in it, or are people just getting addicted to blowing things up? And quite frankly, even if people are just getting addicted to blowing things up, is that not in and of itself a commentary on the satire, right? Like that we live in a world where sometimes the allure of power through military action and violence is its own kind of thing that people seek after. I'm reminded of a video clip that I watched where a guy talked about as a Marine, letters that he would get from children. You know, children who would write things, and you know, some of which are beautiful and sentimental and some of which are well-intended. You know, so a couple that stuck out were like one kid that said, you know, thanks so much for dying for our freedom. And this guy's like, I'm not dead. Like, you know, okay. Another kid that wrote in and said, you know, someday I want to grow up to be just like you so I can kill people too. And it was like, wow. I'm sure this kid doesn't understand what that means, but there's something alluring to the military power that I think is a challenging place that we need to have conversations about. I'm curious, Brian, what's your thought as far as, so we've talked about the violence piece, right? But like, where does our Christianity, where does our Christian ethic, you know, where does Jesus sit? You know, what would Jesus do in delivering democracy by nuke?
Yeah, I think this is kind of a, you know, this is a topic that we've touched on before. In fact, I think we did an entire podcast on this in terms of like how we deal with content and how we internalize it. And the ways in which, whether we find it affecting us or not, right? And I think one of the things we touched on in that podcast was kind of like, well, how is it that meta analysis that we can do that's like, well, how is this kind of with my soul? Like, how is this affecting me? And, you know, what am I getting out of it? Right. And I think this game to me, Helldivers 2, the special sauce to me seems to be that camaraderie component, because there is something really special about working as a team, a close, tight unit together and accomplishing things. Like you set up a plan and then you execute the plan and then it actually works, or maybe hilariously it goes wrong. But either way, right, you have this team bonding moment that's really special. And I think that is the special sauce of the game, right? That's what makes the game great. It's not necessarily, I mean, the explosions are fun and stuff, but we have lots of games we can play that have fun explosions or, you know, cool animations and all that sort of stuff. But that, you know, again, that teamwork component, you know, if you've been on a sports team, I played sports in high school. And to me, this kind of has that same component that reminded me of when I played basketball or, you know, any of the other team sports. And you're all pulling in the same direction, you know, and you're all trying to accomplish a goal and you have a plan, you know, so you have various things, plays you're trying to run and so on. And sometimes they work perfectly. And man, you just celebrate when that happens. It's that kind of thing. There's a close bonding thing that happens that I think is a really special gift that God gives us, right? This teamwork aspect where we can come together as a community. And I find generally as like a small community, right? Like of like, I mean, I'm sure this happens maybe with larger crowds too, but in my experience, it's really special when that numbers are kind of small, right? They're 5 to 7 people, and you're just like, you just really are all in on the same goal. And you all, you know, kind of know what the other person is going to do. Man, that is really cool. And this game has that for sure. And I think, you know, in terms of that aspect for, you know, is that something that, you know, Christ would approve of? I think absolutely.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point with the team mechanics, because this is a game that actually is not fun by yourself. You know, trying to play it by yourself, it's just like there's not that special sauce. And quite frankly, it's just really hard, you know, because you die and then that's it. And there's also an element to the game, as you were talking about, that it's that small group. But there is a part of the game where you're pulling towards a larger purpose, right? You've got this regional map and you're trying to, you know, prevent the bugs from taking over. You're trying to spread democracy, or eventually, I guess, towards the end, when you get into the higher tiers, you're trying to fight off automatons or something like that. But you see the global progress being made towards affecting change. So that's kind of neat as well, to see not only that you're creating this goal and this camaraderie with local teammates, but then also that you say, hey, we as a whole community of Helldivers, we are trying to affect change on a massive scale. And yeah, okay, it's just, you know, fake democracy in a video game. And so I think that's both alluring, and also I think then the satire of it gives us that perspective to realize why that's challenging when the teamwork and camaraderie and the larger goal is, you know, spreading our empire's influence over other countries, or, you know, forced democracy, where we say, well, you know, isn't this great? We're going to take over your land, and who cares how many people die? And there was even a piece, I mean, that perspective, right, talking about the dispensability of human life in the game. Somebody pointed out in a TikTok that I watched, they said that apparently the character voice changes a little bit every time you reload in, and that you never name your character, and that you only ever name your ship. And so their take on it was, every time your person dies, and I'd have to go back and look at some specifics on this, if like the body stays there when you load in again, but every time your character dies and then your teammates have to call in for reinforcements, that they're not calling in for resuscitation, they're calling in for reinforcements, and you then drop a new person and you come in as a new person. So there's something also, there's a little commentary, which I think is just too hard to pick up on. Maybe they need to make it more in your face, about the dispensability of human life in the midst of warfare, where we say, you know, it doesn't matter how many lives we go through as long as we, you know, spread democracy. And I think we can see that like in things like the Russia and Ukraine war, where, you know, Russia is just dispensing human life to try to expand its borders a little bit and spread its imperial influence into Ukraine. It's like, you know, at some point you have to stop and say, time out. These are human lives. but yeah. And then I think the faith perspective on it too. You know, the moral dilemmas, there's not a lot of moral gray areas in this game. It's, you just kind of kill the bugs. But I do think that the teamwork, the camaraderie, the working towards a better goal, a broader goal, that's all good stuff. I'm curious if there's more to it later on, or if perhaps there's more elements that I haven't gotten into because I've only played, you know, 5 or 6 hours. But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up that like global component as well. Like, not only are you and your little team working towards a goal, but you're like working towards this common goal with a whole bunch of other teams. And yeah, I think it's also interesting the, you know, the kind of disposability aspect that you're talking about. And I had read an article somewhere too about that, about how like, yeah, you're not actually playing the same guy each time. It's like a new guy coming in. You also touched on the current Russia-Ukraine conflict, which, yeah, it's just like anytime that we start to tie back to like real human conflicts, we get into really difficult areas to deal with, right? Like even in the Bible, we have numerous examples of conflict, especially in the Old Testament. And so, yes. You know, it does seem that there's a time and place for like righteous warfare, but I think determining when, you know, when we're sort of, when we sort of have God's favor to engage in warfare, I think is a very difficult topic.
And historically difficult too. You know, you look at the Crusades, right? That like, yeah, they said they had God's favor and they put crosses on their shields and they spread Christianity, right? Like just replace the word democracy in this game with Christianity. And suddenly you go from kind of a, you know, a moral high ground of we're spreading democracy to these bugs to a, you know, kind of faith-based moral high ground of we're spreading Christianity. And yeah, I mean, you know, even getting into in Jesus's time, you know, the Roman Empire, you know, they didn't want the Jewish people to rise up, and to the point that they literally were willing to murder babies in order to prevent the Jewish people from being in power. And so it's a really challenging thing. And I think, you know, you just ask any number of people, current warfare going on in Israel-Palestine, people have very strong opinions one side or the other, depending on which religious perspective they hold to be more correct or which moral high ground they hold to be more correct. And I'm not going to get into any of the specifics on that war because it's too hot button to touch. But I do think on both sides that you can see the dehumanization of your enemy and saying, well, those aren't even really people. They're just disposable. We can just dispose of them because they don't matter. So it's a challenging topic. And I think the hardest part for me is a question of do we have enough media literacy, if you will, to have these critical and engaging conversations when we get to intelligent satire to say, this is satire. you know, do you see the satire here? Or are you so taken by what you think is a serious message that you actually miss the satire and you're allured by what you think is serious? So that's a hard one. Are there any other games or media properties you can think of? I mean, you mentioned Broforce. We talked about Starship Troopers. Some other good... I think the one that comes to mind for me really quick was like Tropic Thunder. It was an obvious satire of Vietnam era movies. Are there any others you can think of?
Not off the top of my head. I know there are quite a few out there. And I think there's also some, you know, there's a sort of spectrum that some media lies upon where, you know, there's media that takes everything hyper seriously. And there's media like this game and Starship Troopers and things like that, where it's really trying to be very obvious satire. And then I think there's, you know, stuff in between that's mm-hmm. maybe harder to figure out. I'm trying to think of, there's a couple of movies that I haven't seen, but that I understand kind of fall somewhere in here. So something like Apocalypse Now, I think has a satirical component, but I'm not sure, again, having not seen it, I don't know where that falls in terms of the message of the movie.
I'd have to think.
But I do think there are, you know, again, there are, again, some pieces of media that are maybe less clear about where they fall on this spectrum. I was also thinking back to our part of our conversation earlier in terms of like, you know, when is God with us? You know, when is he sort of not necessarily advocating for war, but you know, on our side, so to speak. And I was thinking of the conversion of Constantine and like what a kind of weird area that is. A Roman emperor who is converted to Christianity and then actually put a, you know, a Christian symbol on his, you know, the shields of his warriors, and was, right. you know, was God with Constantine or not? And, you know, those are difficult questions.
Right. Well, and I've struggled. I mean, the even the early Israelite story, you know, there's the story of Moses and the exile, the Exodus from Egypt, right? And it's pretty clear and cut and dry in that story, right? That the Egyptian Pharaoh is the bad guy. Moses is the good guy. You know, God favors Moses. They go into the wilderness, right? Eventually they get to the promised land where they wipe out all the Canaanites because God has favored them. But it's like, wait a second. Like, but what if you're the Canaanites? Which I think was a fascinating story I was reading up on in seminary one time about how liberation theology, right, which is kind of, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., very popular amongst the, you know, post-slavery black community. And they say, hey, look, this story of Moses, this speaks to us, this deliverance from out of slavery and into freedom. This speaks to us. This is very liberative for us. And some people took that story and they thought, oh, this is great. You know, the liberation theology is going to be great. We're going to take this to the native people and they too will understand what it means to go from being, you know, frustrated and then to be liberated. And the native people read the story and they went, we're the Canaanites. In this story, you all are the, you know, but we're the Canaanites. You came in and took our land, and you eradicated our people and did so in a sense of holiness and manifest destiny. And this does not speak to our peoples. Wait a second. So I think then it's also challenging when you try to apply those stories and maybe it's not so universal. And, there's a lot more gray area, I think, than we'd like to admit sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's, you know, as we interact with this kind of media, again, kind of going back to that podcast where we talked about this, I think it's important to do that meta analysis of, you know, how is this affecting me? And, you know, is this causing some kind of problem? You know, is my attitude and the way that this game or movie or whatever it is, you know, is that affecting me in a negative way? And being able to kind of look in on yourself and the way that you're interacting with media, like, I think a good example of this is, you know, something like Spec Ops The Line, a game that I don't think, unfortunately, recently was like delisted from everything. But I think an important game because it actually, by the end, spoilers, I guess, for a game that you can't get anymore, but it sort of forces you to do this meta analysis by you talking about your actions in the game, that are war crimes, right? There's a point in the game where you have to make a decision, you know, whether to use a weapon that is, you know, recognized by convention as, you know, not something that we're able to use in war, right? We have certain restrictions, the Geneva Convention and so on, that say, hey, there are certain types of warfare that just aren't allowed, right?
Sure.
It's like chemical weapons and certain other weapons. They are so horrifying that if you use these and, you know, we're able to bring you to a tribunal, we're able to bring you to court, we will find you guilty of war crimes, you know, sort of crimes against humanity, right? And this game kind of by the end spells that out, like, hey, guess what? You're a war criminal. And that's like a tough message, but the kind of thing that I think we as Christians should be able to do ourselves, do that meta analysis of, hey, is the thing I'm doing in this game like really something, you know, how is this affecting my soul?
Yeah, this reminds me two things that come to mind that are interesting for the role play of it, right? That in some ways this allows us to role play and have these meta narratives I was thinking about, first off, the game Deus Ex. Have you ever played Deus Ex? Which, again, we'll give some spoilers here, but it's like a 30-year-old game, so I think we're clear on spoilers.
Yeah, I think we're okay.
But if I remember correctly, there's a part in that game where, like, you're playing along and, you know, you're working for, what, UNESCO or UNITECO or something, some corporate, you know, government entity thing, and you're fighting this other government entity. And, like, 10 hours in or something like that, you realize, oh, you're the bad guys. And once you find out that information, you're given a choice. Do you stay with the group that you've been with, or do you change your loyalty? Which I think, you know, it's really interesting to then be put in that situation where you go, oh, maybe we're not the good guys here. You know, I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine who was a Marine and talked about going into, oh gosh, I can't remember the city now, someplace in the Middle East, but basically going into that city, they came through with blaring horns and said, everybody get out. We're going to completely take this city. If you're not out in the next 24 hours, anybody left will be deemed an enemy and we will kill you all. And after that experience, he said, I realized we were the bad guys. Like, we did it with a sense of moral high ground. We did it because we were trying to find the enemies. We were trying to find bin Laden, who knows. But he said, I don't think we were the good guys there. Like, we kicked people out of their homes, and if people weren't willing to leave their homes within a certain period of time, we would shoot and kill them. How horrible is that? So, you know, I was thinking about that. And then there's another game that came to mind that's actually not a real game. It's a game that, let's see here. It's in a book called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. Really good book about game developers. Highly recommend it to anybody. It's kind of a fascinating book that dances around a pseudo romance of friends and how their friendship and their relationship changes over decades of knowing each other and the games they develop as they go. But one of the first games that the female lead character plays or makes is a game in which it tricks the player into believing that they're building mundane factory parts throughout the game. And it seems like this boring game, manufacturing factory parts, until eventually at the end, it's revealed that these are manufacturing equipment for Nazis during the Holocaust. And so, like, the opportunity, you know, it's like this horrible game and people hated it, but the opportunity for the player to step in and go, whoa, I would never have thought about what would it be like to be a German citizen and you're being told you're manufacturing parts for your government and this is just, you know, you're just doing your work. And eventually to find out, wait a second, maybe there's a moral choice here. Maybe I was in the wrong. And then what do we do when we're confronted with that information? So I would have loved to see, and I don't think it's going to happen, but I would love to see a game like Helldivers confront you with something like that, you know, 20 hours into the game and go, maybe these bugs are actually sentient creatures and you've been eliminating their culture and their, you know, I don't know, all that kind of stuff. Last thing I'll say, which is a similar experience is found in The Last of Us Part 2, which is why it's one of my favorite games of all time. You're going through and you're taking out the enemies, but these enemies have names. They have pets. The pets whimper when you shoot them. People call out their names. It's like you shoot somebody and then the neighbor comes out. They go, Fred, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're gone, Fred. And you just realize, oh, I didn't just kill some nameless, faceless enemy. I killed Fred, who was beloved by his neighbor, and he had a pet dog. And
yep.
What have I done? Right. But then you also have to do that meta analysis of like, okay, hold on. How is it with my soul? Because this is pretty real and pretty hard. So,
yeah. Another couple pieces of media that I wanted to mention along in this vein that are kind of, I think, thought provoking. If you haven't seen the Disney Plus Star Wars series Andor, definitely going to want to check that out. I don't want to go into spoilers because if you haven't seen it, it's
so good.
This is just amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it deals with a lot of the things that you just talked about.
Really, all of Star Wars, the whole universe, but especially Andor.
Yeah, especially Andor. Really touches on a lot of these subjects that we've been talking about in a really thought provoking way. And then the other one that's out there that I thought of was Papers, Please, which is an older indie game, but you play as a clerk, essentially, who works at a border station of like a fictional country that's obviously very, you know, it's kind of classic USSR, kind of it feels very Soviet bloc kind of a deal. And you have to make these difficult moral decisions about, you know, this person is, you know, they have this really sad story about why they need to cross the border. Maybe they need to get, you know, money or something to a sick relative, but their papers are obviously not completely in order. And so you have to make the decision of, do I let this person through and risk, the sort of management coming down on me, you know, and making my life difficult, or do I deny them and make my life a little bit easier? So Papers, Please, definitely.
Wow. Okay.
Another one to check out.
Goodness. Yeah. I just looked it up as you were talking, and it's this game that like graphics kind of remind me of early, like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, but also like dealing with questions of immigration and, you know, gosh, what a deep subject to get into. But I do think it's fascinating because games allow us to have these kinds of conversations and live these experiences without having to live them, and then say, okay, well, how did that, I mean, you know, maybe this job is harder than I thought it was. Maybe the people who are in charge of making these decisions or the people in charge of the policies that, you know, but it gives a lived experience to something that otherwise is just, we think of as a simple problem, and perhaps there's not a simple solution. What about all the good things Darth Vader did?
I think that's something
he was really a job special creator. About. I'm just kidding. Don't. I'm not defending Darth Vader, but
I think that's something really special about games, right? Certainly movies can be thought provoking and can leave a lasting impact on us. But ultimately we're along for the ride, right? We don't get to make the decision about whether we're going to take that action. Like we do in Spec Ops The Line, we can choose. I mean, I guess our choice is to just not continue to play the game, right? Because that game is sort of linear. But it's something like Papers, Please presents us with, again, similar difficult moral decisions, that, you know, we have to make that decision when we're playing that game. And I think there's something really special about that we can't get from other media. So that's something I love about games. And certainly, I think also something that helps us, again, practice that meta analysis. That's really special about games.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brian, I think we're at about time for this week's episode of our podcast. Anything else you want to say before I wrap us up with our normal credits and thankses?
No, I just, this, you know, thanks for bringing up this topic. You brought this forward, and, you know, I think it's very, of the moment. And I think it was a good opportunity for us to discuss, you know, these types of subjects. It's something that as Christians, we've got to wrestle with.
Right. And I do think there's a moral imperative, right? That as Christians, we are not called simply to observe, but we're called to action. We're called to reaction. We're called to be people who make changes and make the world a better place, and move that needle, kind of like the global, watching the democracy spread. We're called to make changes that will make the world a better place and more Christ-like. And to do those things with in mind the perspective of what Christ might want us to do. So, all right. Well, let me wrap up our show. by saying first and foremost that you can always support us at patreon.com/churchforgamers, scrolling across your screen here at the bottom if you're watching us on YouTube. Again, that is patreon.com/churchforgamers. We would also love for you to join our community and let us know your thoughts. You can always comment on our videos, comment wherever you're listening, or come hang out in our community on Discord. You can join the community on Discord by going to discord.churchforgamers.com. And special thank you, as always, we want to thank our silver level Patreon supporters. We just have the one, Lonnie White. Well, I guess I think we've got a couple, but some have chosen to remain anonymous. But Lonnie White is one of ours that we do thank all the time for his generosity and support. So thank you for him and his generosity. And we will see you perhaps on our Discord. Perhaps you will hear, we will not hear you. You will hear us on a future podcast, or perhaps we will connect some other way. So signing off, I am Reverend David Petty.
And I'm Brian.
And we'll see you around. Take care.